Ooh, Freakonomics.
Yes, the familiar sound. We welcome back to the studio now our good friend Stephen Dubner, co-author of the Freakonomics books and blog, and we'll soon be able to read why we haven't heard from Stephen in a while, and that is Super Freakonomics, Global Cooling, Patriotic Prostitutes, and Why Suicide Bombers Should Buy Life Insurance. That's your new book out in about 3 weeks. That's what you've been working on?
You sound pretty dismissive, yeah, but That's the result of that's all you could come up with after 4.5 years in a corkboard room. But yeah, that's true.
4.5 years. Well, you were on the program on February 24th. Okay.
Wow.
The economy has pretty much been going straight up.
Told you
since
so.
Then. Yeah. I mean, I'm just figuring.
Oh, you're blaming it on my.
Well,
absence,
I'm trying to do the Freakonomics thing myself and try to understand what's going on in the world.
Well, if that's the case, then you certainly shouldn't have had me back today. If you wanted to
keep
going.
I know.
Things are
going
to take a dive.
By the way, Stephen Dubner, Celeste Headlee.
Hi, Celeste.
Hello.
She was not here when you were here last.
Nice to meet you too.
I hear you sing.
I do.
Yeah, I'd like to hear that. Can we...
Not in this segment.
All right.
Not in this segment, no, because we invited you here on the program to talk about a story that is in your new book, but in some ways reminds people of the sort of Freakonomic approach to how you solve problems and figure out what's really going on as opposed to what the conventional wisdom suggests is going on. And it's a story from the 19th century.
Exactly. A young doctor in Vienna named Ignaz Semmelweis, whose name really should be known to all of us the way that, you know, I don't know about a George Washington, at least a George Washington.
Why?
Carver. He was a pioneer and a smart guy who has saved millions of lives.
Millions.
Millions. Maybe, yeah, million, easily millions.
Easily millions.
And the way he did it was by figuring out why women were dying in this maternity hospital in Vienna, which was one of the best hospitals of the day. There was a death rate.
And it wasn't just one maternity hospital. This was a common problem in what period are we talking about?
This was in the 1840s, but okay. It predated that for decades, maybe centuries. It was called puerperal fever, childbed fever. And even in the best hospitals in the world like his, as many as 1 in 6 women would die after giving birth to a child. And frankly, the doctors of the day... Medicine was obviously not as advanced as it is today. Medicine doctors thought they were considered themselves fairly omnipotent. They had all kinds of reasons why this fever raged, but truth be told, they didn't know.
They would deliver the baby.
Healthy women would come to a hospital, deliver a baby, and die.
Get a fever and die.
Exactly. Now, interestingly, there were all kinds of confounding circumstances. The doctors blamed things like they thought the women wore petticoats too tight. Okay, they thought the women got up from the beds too soon after giving birth. They blamed the women, basically. All male doctors at the time, they blamed the women. He said, let's try to figure out what's actually going on.
There was also a theory I noted in the story that modesty had something to do with it.
Yeah, there was the idea that women in a position to have their privates exposed,
right,
to male doctors just couldn't handle it and died on the spot.
They died,
exactly,
of embarrassment.
I'd rather die than,
yes,
have,
cue,
yeah,
the fainting soprano, please, right. So he said, you know what, this, even if any of these are true, we're not improving it. So let's use the numbers to try to solve the mystery. And that's what he did. There was a very strange situation there. There were two wards, a ward where male doctors delivered babies and a ward where female midwives delivered babies, because again, women were not allowed to become doctors. He began to look at the death rates in the two wards and found that the doctor's ward death rate was 2 or 3 times higher than the midwives' wards. So you say, okay, maybe it is the presence of men, but
the embarrassment theory,
perhaps. But he began, but then he said, well, the babies often die too, and the babies aren't dying anymore.
They can't be embarrassed.
They,
right,
can't be embarrassed,
right,
precisely. So he began to back it up, and what he found was that the male doctors, were coming to the delivery ward from the autopsy ward. The autopsy was a fairly new practice of the day, and it was a miraculous way to understand how the body worked. The problem was hand washing was not a particularly advanced practice at that time. If at best, you might dip your hands into the same bucket of cold water that the guy before you had dipped his hands into. Semmelweis realized, after a beloved mentor of his died after an autopsy getting accidentally sliced on the finger, that maybe the cadaverous particles, in other words, the thing that killed the person who's having the autopsy, may be getting passed along on the hands of the doctors who then go to deliver the women.
So the fever
babies.
Of the guy who died in the autopsy room was similar to what what happened to the women.
Whatever killed that person, it was basically, remember, this is pre-germ theory.
Yeah, right.
We didn't know what germs were, and he kind of figured it out. He proposed a solution, chlorinated wash, put a little chloride of lime in the water, have the doctors vigorously scrub their hands. Within a week after doing this, the death rate at that hospital plunged to near zero.
Wow.
Now, the problem is, people still don't wash their hands very, very often and very well, particularly doctors, even in modern hospitals, where the death rate from bacterial infections is shockingly high.
But I would think that if you're in a room with dead bodies and you're reaching around, that it would occur to you to
you
wash
would think
your hands.
Well, we no
you
longer
in...
have the same doctor doing the autopsy that then steps into the maternity
ward. That's true. We've got that going for us.
You would think that because you live in 2009. If you lived in 1847, it wasn't really what you thought about. Blood, the idea, you know, again, these are doctors who are blaming women for getting the disease on wearing petticoats too tight.
Freakonomics.
So, this is one of the stories in your new book, which is out in 3 weeks, Super Freakonomics, Global Cooling, Patriotic Prostitutes, Why Suicide Bombers Should Buy Life Insurance. Yes. Now, how have you...
Plainly, I should have called you for advice before.
No, I'm loving it. I'm totally loving it. Aside from the trauma of writing this book, which we've heard about, you know, stuck in a room, working on a book, and I've been there, you know, it's tough. How has sort of the Freakonomics strategy informed your sort of observations of what's been going on since you've not been on the show?
Like, well,
the economy is going up and down.
I mean, we've talked about this a little bit when I've been here to talk about the economy. People respond very badly to emotion. Obviously, we need emotion to survive in life. But, you know, if there's a benefit to what we do with Freakonomics, it's that on the downside, you could say, these guys just take numbers, essentially. And we use numbers. We use the power of aggregated data to try to make conclusions about life. And we reduce life to kind of what the typical person would do in this situation. And a lot of people could say, well, that's kind of horrible because I'm not a typical person. You know, they say that if you add up all the adult men and women in the world, on average, they all have one testicle and one breast. But most people we know do not have that. So on average, it's not very helpful. But what we try to do is use the numbers to figure out what is average or what's typical. What you find is that anomalies work their ways into the news and then into our minds very aggressively, and they lodge there. Then we base our thinking going forward on these anomalous conclusions, like a stock market meltdown. So then we think that the world is coming to an end and so on. So I think
emotion gets in the way.
Emotion gets in the way. We need it. We use it way too much when we try to make rational decisions. I'm not saying we should throw it out.
So
but
you're blaming the media. We cover these
not the media
news
generally,
stories.
Specifically this show.
Okay.
Right. I see.
Well, I've only been here for like a week and a couple
so
days.
It's
I think
John.
It's John.
I'm blaming John. You're
that's right. Emotional wreck on the show. Getting in the way of everything. Stephen Dubner, I just want to say congratulations on the new book.
Thank you.
With your co-author. And welcome back.
Thanks very much.
All right. Super Freakonomics.
Super Freakonomics. We even like updated that for you. Again, Stephen Dubner, author of the Freakonomics book and blog. Don't forget the blog. And his new book, Super Freakonomics, is out in about 3 weeks.